As Dan said, we're going to be doing something a little different in this class, and you'll kind of see what that is towards the end of this evening's lesson, and hopefully you won't stone me. So, which, by the way, this is Florida, so there's not a whole lot of rocks, so I got a chance.
They'll sand you to death.
They'll sand me to death. Oh, boy. Okay. Is that working? Yes. Okay, there we go. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. How many of you believe that? That's right. If we look at this psalm, let's go ahead and turn to Psalm 139. As David considered himself, beginning of verse 13, Psalm 139, beginning of verse 13. For you have formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. What can we learn? As David considered, and you look and you read through the Psalms, David considered nature, right? He looked at nature and he thought about God. And then he looks at himself and begins to think about God's involvement in him as an individual. What are some things that he draws out from this? What are some concepts that he draws out from this this thought? Anything? God was always there. There was never a time where, when he even began to be formed, God didn't know him. Anything else? God is all knowing. Do we take comfort in that? Or can we? Can y'all read that, by the way? Can y'all? Not very well? Okay. Well, to a colorblind individual, it looks perfect. Okay. Look at Matthew 6. Matthew 6. Can we take comfort in knowing that God knows us individually? Me personally. Not me when I'm at church, not me, you know, but me individually. Can I take comfort in knowing that? Matthew 6, beginning in verse 24. And you remember the context, Sermon on the Mount, talking about our lives in relationship to God. He says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." And for this reason, what reason you can't serve two? For this reason, I say to you, do not be worried about your life, as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet their heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek after these things. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first the kingdom, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And the church says amen to that. But as we look at this passage, we look at David's concept and considering us individually. Can we find comfort in knowing that God knows me individually, as an individual, knows what I'm struggling, knows what I need? Can I find comfort in that? Look at just a few pages over, or scroll down on your electronic device. Which, by the way, I'm hearing less and less pages turning because everybody's going to the finger thing. Single tier. All right. Begin in verse 21. That was the Indian. Remember the commercial with the Indian? Yeah, okay, sorry. 10. I can't just say an ambiguous verse and you know what chapter? What's wrong with you people? Matthew 10, verse 29. Are not two sparrows sold for a cent, or a farthing, as the King James would say? And yet, not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So do not fear, you are more valuable than many sparrows. You know, the concept here is that every time a bird touches the ground, God knows that. And the very hairs of your head are numbered, which for some of us is getting easier. Say what? No, it's not. And he says you're worth many sparrows. How many? Some of you are probably worth more than others, but many sparrows, okay? But comfort, as an individual, I can take comfort in God knowing where I am. David took comfort in knowing that God knew him even in his inward parts. And that says a lot about the life of a child in the womb. It says a lot about that. It says a lot about our God knowing that much about us. Knowing about that, those things. So he took comfort in knowing that as an individual. How about us as a congregation, as a unit? What are some things that we can understand more by reading the scripture about us as a unit? Some things, I forgot to flick this actually. Which I can't even read it over there. And my notes, I can't read them on my notes either, so I don't even know why I have them. God knows our mental and physical capabilities, right? He knows our limits. We can take great comfort in knowing that God understands who we are. When sometimes nobody else does. God knows who we are. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 12. As a unit, the body of Christ. Would somebody like to read that for us, 14 through 27, loud and proud? Anybody? I'll take that as a no. 12, 14 through 27. I'm ready. Can you do it? Loud. Yes, sir. All right. So we looked in Psalm, we looked at the individual in relationship to God knowing about the individual. We look at here in this passage, looking at the church. What kind of image do we have? What image is given here of the church? A body. Now, a body, in a healthy body, works together well, right? In a normal situation, a healthy body works together well. And that's what we're looking at here. Some things that we can draw out of this, passage. The body is a collective of individuals, right? In this passage, we are the Christ body and individually members of it. God has organized the body. God organized it. You are in your place because God put you there. Now that kind of goes back to what we looked at earlier. God knows us and knows where to put us, right? That makes sense. That would make sense. Everybody has a role. Everybody has a role in the body. In your body, every part that needs to be there is there, right? In a normal situation. And things are... Never mind. In a normal situation, everybody has their part. Everybody's doing something, right? In a normal situation. Everybody has a role. And God gave honor to every part so that we are all equal in the body. There's no division. The same price was paid for everybody, right? We all have that, and we all have our role. And we should all care for each other. And you've heard the analogy How many of you have ever hit your hand or finger or thumb with a hammer? How many of you have done that? How many of you have done it more than once? Slow learners, right? Okay, so what's usually the first response when one digit hurts? What does the other hand do? It takes care of that other digit, right? I mean, all of our attention is on that one digit when it's hurting. It's the same thing in the body. When there's hurt, when we know there's hurt, when we know there's hurt, there should be attention giving. That's part of the reason we have the family prayer. When we know there's hurt, there needs to be attention given to that member. We'll get to more of that later on. But that's something that, as we see here, here's the congregation working. And there's a whole lot here, obviously, that we're not going to have time to dive into. But a healthy congregation works like a body. Christ is the head. Everybody has their part. Everybody's working together for the good of the body and for to bless those around it, okay? Let's look over at Ephesians chapter 4. So we've looked at the individual. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. I think some of you are turning your pages a little bit louder for me now. I appreciate that. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. And so as you look here, with truth and love, we grow in all aspects, like as to Christ. And when each part is working, the whole body grows and is edified. When each part is working. Now, as we read these passages, we see sort of a what should be, right? When we read these passages, we see a healthy congregation working together like a body. We see in Ephesians what should be. Is that always the case? Do you mean there could be issues in a congregation? Is there an example of one in the New Testament? Of conflict? Let's look at a conflict. What happens when you add personalities? When we read these passages, here is what is supposed to happen. How many of you have had instructions from IKEA? And here is what is supposed to happen, and here's what actually happens. I used to put like motorcycles and ATVs and that kind of stuff together out of the crate. So worked at a dealership, they would come in a crate, which, by the way, I dropped one time from this high up, and it was still good. Anyway, it survived. They're crated very well. And so you open up the crate, and it's all in pieces, and you start putting it together, and then you realize, wait a second, what is happening on the instructions is not happening here. Like, they've drilled the hole slightly cattywampus, which is a technical term, right, Novell? Yeah. It's slightly cattywampus, and it's not going to line up. It's just not going to happen. And so there is what is supposed to happen, and then there's what happens. There's the Bible is what tells us what is supposed to happen. And then in real life, there's what happens sometimes, right? Let's look at a situation of conflict in Acts. Acts 15, 36 through 40. This is beginning Paul's second missionary journey. Acts 15, beginning in verse 36. After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord, and see how they are," which is a good thing to do. And Barnabas wanted to take John, called Mark, along with him. And you remember what happened? Well, we'll read what it says right here what happens. But Paul kept insisting that they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia. Now, there's a lot of reasons just assumed about why John Mark deserted him in Pamphylia. Actually, one of the reasons is because, like, when you get into the coast there and then you have to go up into the other cities, it is up. There's a mountainous area they were in, and maybe he didn't want to do that. You know, he's used to a flatter. There are a lot of assumptions as to why John Mark went back. But John Mark went back. And Paul's saying, you know what? No, we don't need to take him. He deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there occurred such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another, and Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and left, being committed by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. And he was traveling through Syria and then Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Okay, so was this like a small disagreement? The language here is very strong. There was such a sharp disagreement that they split and went different ways. Was this a doctrinal matter? Now, I am not referencing Galatians 2 when Paul withstood Peter to the face. There was some correction that needed to be taking place there. But it seems here that there was a matter of opinion as to what needed to be happening. Paul said, you know, we don't want to take him. And as we look at what can we learn from this situation? First, we need to learn that spiritual maturity does not erase personality differences. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because I have come into a spiritual plane does not mean that I am now impervious to personality differences. Anybody married? Sorry, that was probably bad. But you understand what I'm saying. There comes a time when there will be personality differences. Because we're what? Different. We're different. Just because you reach a certain spiritual level of maturity does not mean that there will not be discord from time to time. Personality conflict can arise between people who share the same beliefs. Personality conflicts can arise between people who have served together for many years. It just happens sometimes, right? It happens. It happens between these two. God was able to use it. Now he's got two groups going different directions. And so that was something that worked out for the gospel in that situation. What else can we learn from this situation? Personality differences can lead to personality clashes that can cause us to sin. There's those pesky verses in the Bible about loving each other. Do those ever get in the way of how we actually feel about somebody? Now, there's a difference between felt emotional and what I do to serve other people. But can they get in the way of sometimes how we feel in the moment about a certain situation? In this situation, both men were right and both men were wrong. Now, Barnabas is, what is he known for? Encourager, right? Barnabas is known as the encourager. When you read Paul's letters and you read how Paul worked in Acts, how do you see, are there some differences between the two, you think, maybe? Could Paul encourage? And we see that he does in some of the letters. But is that his go-to thing? Paul, no. He's one of those guys that's more of like up front. And, you know, he was establishing beachheads in a lot of areas as far as the church and had a lot of strong opposition, and you need a strong personality to do that. But you also need a Barnabas to come in behind also, right? You need an encourager. You need people who, once they've been there, you need somebody coming in saying you can keep doing it, right? And Barnabas was that guy. And this is just my imagination between, you know, the conversation that took place, and it seems from the text that it wasn't just one conversation, that they, over a period of time, were discussing the validity of bringing John Mark or not. And I could see Paul quoting, you know, he's turned his head at the plow. He doesn't need to go. He totally bailed on us whenever we were there last time. You know, he's going to do it again. And yet it's not like he could just kind of like, you know, well, you know what, guys, I'm going to leave. You know, good luck with that. They were counting on him to be a part of the work. Okay? They were counting on him. If he goes back, it's not like he has his own credit card that he can just, you know, work his way. He's got to take resources that they had for travel to go back with them, right? So now when they're one man down, they have resources to send him back. It just throws your plans into discord. And you're out on the field. It's not like you can phone home and say, hey, can you send a replacement? Right? This was a bigger deal than just somebody went home, okay? This was a bigger deal. And so he bailed on him. So I could totally see Paul making that argument. But Barnabas, the encourager, and by the way, this is sort of his cousin, he could be saying, well, you know, he needs a second chance. You know, we need to consider the grace of God in this situation. And that, could you see Barnabas making that argument? And so this is not a doctrinal issue here. This is not a doctrinal issue. This is a matter of opinion on whether or not they should take John Mark. Paul says no. He vehemently says no. And they go their different ways. And so Paul was right about not needing someone who could bail on him. Barnabas was right about the potential in John Mark in Colossians 4:10. And 1 Timothy 4:11, we see Paul saying that John Mark was useful even later on. Okay, so there was reconciliation here. Okay, both violated these passages. Let's read 1 Corinthians 13:5. What does 1 Corinthians 13:5 say about? Well, what is 1 Corinthians 13? Love, the love chapter, right? We know that. Everybody's been to a wedding. Beginning in verse 4, love is patient, love is kind, it is not jealous, love does not brag, is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, and doesn't seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered. Were they provoked here? Yes. Look in Colossians chapter 3. Who wrote 1 Corinthians, by the way? Paul. Who wrote Colossians? Yeah. Irony. Colossians 3, verse 12. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Huh? What's that? Paul is writing a letter to himself. Maybe he should have been more lenient with John. You know, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, right? And we're reading this a few years removed from when it actually happened. So it's easy for us to say on this side of it what should have happened. But it's interesting that it's recorded. Right? It's interesting that it's recorded. There's something here for us to learn. Can there be conflict even amongst spiritual giants? Can there be conflict? Yes, there can be. Do we have something to help us resolve that conflict? Prayer, yes. Lots of it. Do we have a conflict model in the Bible? Conflict resolution model in the Bible? Who gave us that? Jesus did, right? And we'll get to that later in our study. But here's a situation where just because there's conflict, or just because we've reached a certain plane, doesn't mean we can't have conflict. A person's greatest strength often is the area for greatest weakness. Paul was a go-getter, right? Can you go get right over the top of somebody else? Do you understand by that? He was somebody who was going to go in and establish a congregation, stand toe-to-toe with somebody and make sure they obey truth. But could he forget sometimes to be the encourager maybe? And we're assuming, we're adding in here. Barnabas and somebody who is an encourager sometimes may overlook things that don't need to be overlooked. That could be a weakness for those who are big empathizers. And so those things that are our attributes, that are our greatest attributes, can also be a weakness if we don't keep them in check, right? If we don't keep them in perspective of the whole bigger picture. And then unity does not mean that we will all work very closely together. Consider the body. How often do your hands interact with the rest of the body? Quite often, right? Quite often. How often does your foot interact with your head? I'm not talking about your mouth. I don't bend that way anymore, right? I can't do that. But do you see what I'm saying? We can all be parts of the body, but just because we're part of the body doesn't mean we always interact. But are we still unified? Yes. I do more things with some of you than I do others. Does it mean I don't like you? No. Just means we don't interact as much. And now I'm going to be invited to a lot of dinners, apparently. So, but do you understand what I'm saying as far as just in a group, just unity, if we're striving for unity, which we are, does not mean that every one of us will always be BFF with the other person, which means best friends forever, if you didn't know that. Do you understand what we're saying here? Okay, so this is pretty basic stuff. And David, how much time do I have, actually? Do I get my full time? Or okay. 5 after? Okay. We got some more time. Okay, let's do one more thing here. We should not let Oh, there it is. I'll talk with him later. We should not let personality clashes cause us to quit serving the Lord. Has that ever happened? Have you known it to happen? What is my priority in my life as an individual? We need to go back to David. As an individual, my priority is what? Cause of Christ, my relationship with God. I have a responsibility to all of y'all out there, but my primary responsibility is this is between me and God. When somebody gets in between me and God, there's an issue, right? It should never be. Somebody should not be so important that what they say would stop this. Right? Right. That's normal. In a healthy situation, that is what. But sometimes we allow other people's opinions or other people's thoughts or phrases, and we assign motive to why they said or how they said it, and then all of a sudden they're attacking us personally, and we've imagined about why they said a certain phrase, and then all of a sudden I'm allowing that person to block this. And I've empowered them so much when a lot of times they don't even know what they did, right? A lot of times they don't even know they hurt you. We can't allow another person to make us quit serving the Lord. Neither Paul nor Barnabas let this clash stop them from serving the Lord. And we don't read about Paul saying, Paul was traveling throughout Syria and Cilicia telling all the churches about how wrong Barnabas was. We don't see that, do we? Luke did, apparently, but nobody else did. Because Luke wrote Acts. So anyway, that was funny. Some things to think about when we're going through or during conflict. What is the real nature of the difficulty or the conflict? What is really the issue? Have you ever gotten a fight or an argument with somebody and then you realize later on, what are we even arguing about? What was the reason? Exactly. Keep that in mind. Remember what, try and find out what the real issue is. Is it because you just need a sandwich and you're hangry? Or what is the real issue? Okay? Is there an important biblical principle at stake, or is this a matter of opinion? Now, this is why we didn't go to Galatians 2, because Galatians, there was an important principle at stake, and he needed to withstand Peter to the face. Okay? There was something that needed to be done there. And in the situation here, it was a matter of opinion as to whether John Mark should have gone or not have gone. We were not given any information as to this being revelation from God to Paul about John Mark. We're not giving any instance about that. The only thing we can read here is that it was a matter of opinion. And sometimes we have different opinions. Would that be true? Sometimes we have different opinions. And sometimes we have different opinions, and neither one of them's wrong. But we hold so fast to one of those opinions that we can't say, well, no, it's not right or wrong, it's just different. It's not right or wrong, it's just different. And we need to keep that in perspective. Also think about what godly character qualities can the Lord develop in me through this clash, through this conflict. I tend to be the person last into head-on conflict. I've always had this dread with conflict. But conflict can be good. We can learn, we can grow. Some of you know that I like to work with metal and make things with metal. And metal can only be moved and shaped into something unless you heat it up really hot and pound it with a hammer. It's never fun going through that process, but when you're done, it's better, it's stronger than it was before. But it had to go through that process. How many of you have learned something that you would not have learned if you didn't go through conflict? I believe it's called the school of hard knocks, I think is what they're calling that, right? But we can learn through conflict if, and especially if, we apply biblical principles to the conflict. We can learn something from that. And also, always keep in mind, would the cause of Christ be furthered or hindered by how I handle the situation? The unity of the congregation, of your relationship, is so vitally important that it is better to be wronged than for us to get what we are entitled to. What is more important? Is this issue that important that I should probably just step back? I'll be wronged. I'll take this. Because the unity, the church, the bride of Christ is so much more important than whatever this issue is. That must be kept in context when we're dealing with conflict. And lastly, there it is. What could we learn about ourselves and each other if we knew our personality types? Did you know there's different personality types? Have you talked to somebody else before? Right? We know there's different personality types. What would you learn if you knew what yours was and you knew what your spouse's was? What would you learn if you knew what yours was and your children's personality type was? What would you learn if you knew what your personality type was and your eldership personality type was? That was for me, sorry. But do you understand what I'm saying? Could we learn from each other and knowing that? Because each individual personality type interacts differently, does things differently, would respond to each other differently. We need to talk to them differently. There's some people you need to use emotional reason with them because that's what they understand. They understand emotional reasoning. Others need to have facts and figures because that's how they talk. Do you understand what I'm saying? All right, so Sunday, we'll be taking a personality type test. You think I'm joking. When we come in Sunday morning for a Bible class, and I'll make this announcement again, everybody needs to sit with their family. So children will need to be sitting with their parental units or those they came with, and everybody needs to sit in their family units, and not the family groups, but their family, you know, the people you didn't get to choose to be with, right? You need to sit with them. And we're going to go through step by step a personality test. It'll take 7 minutes, maybe longer, but in general it takes 7 minutes. You got to, and we'll give me instructions about this. It'll give you what you think you need to be, the personality type you think others want you to be, and the personality type you are. This is going to be fun. I am not going to ask you guys. You guys will divulge that information to whom you want to. Parents, we're going to talk about how you can parent your children depending on their personality type. We're going to talk about spouses and conflict and all kinds of how they interact. And I will give you mine so you can see me and understand all there is to be. And you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I don't understand now. So that's what we're going to do next Sunday. All right? You are dismissed.